The recordings are started. You may proceed.
Thank you very much. This is Mathieu Vey for the transcript. I'm the CCNSO appointed co-chair of the working group. Hold on a second. And I am very pleased to welcome you all to this fourth and last call of the Stress Test 18 subgroup. I'd like to start this call with the traditional roll call. I'm seeing a number of colleagues in the Adobe Connect room. Would there be anyone who is on audio only that we would add to the roll call? No, so we have everyone on the call. Okay, so our task in this group, just as a reminder, is to report to the CCWG about options with regard to the stress test 18 bylaw change discussion with a clear perspective and time frame, which is that we need to finalize our submission for the draft report, which is due to be issued next week. As a consequence, as we said last time, this is our last opportunity to discuss in this format. And after that, we will have to report to the CCWG and the call from the CCWG taking place at 6 UTC tomorrow. So during the last call, we said that we were narrowing our options to, on the one hand, building upon the proposal from Denmark. There was a proposal by Finn that was building upon an initial proposal by Julia. And so that was one of the areas, one of the options, and the other obviously staying as the CWG second report option. Since then, we have received a slight adjustment from the Denmark proposal, which is on your screen, which is the European GAC members proposal from Mark Carvel from the UK government. We have also received, and we had noticed during the poll, an amendment from Brett Schaffer on the former proposal, which still needs to be discussed, but was met on the list with some support and some reluctance. And finally, we have received a contribution from Phil Cohen regarding the addition of a new provision to address a concern about the potential way for the GAC to basically be designing policy, which we will need to assess. I also would like to point out that the European GAC members' proposal had something is missing one of the aspects of the former Denmark proposal, which was the requirement for the GAC advice to have a clear rationale. And I'm not sure whether that was intentional or not, but I've received suggestions to add this to the to this proposal. So my suggestion to move forward on this call, and remember that at the end of the call we'll have to decide what we report to the CCWG, would be to look at those various options and try and assess whether where we do have the most traction, or at least what are the relevant options to be shared with the CCWG so that the full group can make an informed decision. Let me start with this proposal to add the requirement for the GAC advice to have a clear rationale and check whether, maybe check with the European GAC members who were behind this proposal on the screen, whether that's a friendly amendment. I am seeing some support from Avery in the chat, but I don't know if Mark or anyone else would comment on that. I'm seeing some support from Greg Shatton. So Finn is supporting that, and Pedro is hand is up. Pedro.
Yes, thank you, Mathieu. I think you all can hear me. Actually, it's a question I did in the last call, and I'll put it again. My understanding is, as you said, is that, well, this proposal would include a provision in the general section about the requirement of having a clear rationale for advice, and we fully support it. But there is another element from the original Denmark proposal that I haven't seen in this follow-up proposal from the European colleagues that I think it's important, I think should be preserved, which is the requirement which is indicated by the sentence. In this context, each advisory committee has the right to determine its particular definition of consensus. So I will add to the question that there should be the requirement for the rationale, that this also should be preserved in the general section of the bylaws. Thank you.
Thank you, Pedro. You're right. That was part of the general section of the bylaws in the previous suggestions. And I am sensing some support for that as a principle and with your precision about where to add it in general. Brett, I saw your hand up and now down. Was that intentional? No, Brett, you're back. Please.
Sorry. Just a second here. My chat was not working correctly, so I'm not seeing everybody's comments here, and I also wasn't seeing my hand raised or lowered, so it went up and down. It's sort of a test here. In terms of the clause suggested by Finn that the advice from the GAC be clear and straightforward, I don't see any problem with that. Thank you.
Thank you, Brett. So I think we can consider this an agreed upon requirement that we have that in the proposal. And if we, Steve, would you like to comment on that as well?
Only briefly, Mathieu, and not to make it. Thank you. It's only to suggest that clarity of advice from NEAC is obviously essential. And clarity, let me just give you all an example. You all recall the GAC advice on XXX. And the GAC advice was the words, there is no active support in the GAC. And the clarity requirement pops out at me then because a lot of us who aren't familiar with diplomatic protocols, we didn't know whether that meant the GAC opposed or the GAC supported, right? So clarity is about being clear whether an advice supports or opposes. That's clarity. And rationale is something a little bit different. Rationale would be the reasoning behind the decision. And that reasoning is essential for the community, the broader community, and for the board then to take on board that advice and formulate its response, whether to implement, whether to suggest changes, or whether to even reject it. And without rationale, it's so much more difficult for the community and board to handle it, particularly where some governments didn't approve the advice that came over from the GAC. So let's say clarity of the advice and rationale are both important, but they're not the same thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. So I would suggest that we take that as requirements, definitely, and move to the more difficult conversations that on the other items. I think the proposal that's currently on your screens from the European GAC members is somehow building upon the existing CCWG proposal in the way that it actually restricts the ability for GAC to define fully in all manners the way consensus advice can be provided. And at the same time, it provides the relevant flexibility and autonomy for the GAC to do so within the limits that are in the proposal about either the with a very clear definition of a very small minority of GAC members, which is a strong limit compared to the existing CCWG second report proposal, which was only referring to consensus with no specifics about it. So I think the intent is to provide a balance between this flexibility that had been required by a significant number of governments in the public comment number two and some of the commenters in our group, I should say in public comment two and during the Dublin meeting, and the obvious concerns about the ability for non-consensus advice to be provided the same influence as consensus advice. So we're working a fine balance here, and I think we need to assess whether this particular balance is sufficiently well defined so that it can everyone in this group and in the CCWG can live with it, because obviously it is not going to be everyone's preferred option. Probably is going to be no one's preferred option. But the question here really for us and then for the CCWG is whether this is, with this kind of clarification, it is something that we can live with, something that no one is going to die in the ditch for. So I think that would be, that was the intent, to have some comment on this. And I'd like to get a sense of the group here about whether this particular way of finding the balance is acceptable, hopefully, or if it's not, what would be necessary to slightly adjust it and keep it acceptable for everyone. If anyone wants to comment on that? Brett is first. Brett.
Thank you, Matthew. I think, as I mentioned before, we've had several conversations offline here about how exactly to handle GAC advice. And I think that the friendly amendment that I offered before on this matter is very important to a number of different people. First of all, the GAC has said over and over again that they intend to provide advice by consensus whenever possible, and that consensus whenever possible will be without objection. And we're talking about here as a GAC consensus with a very small minority of objections. But as we know, under GAC operating principles, they can change those operating principles with a simple majority vote. And what we're trying to do is protect the board from potential in the future, in essence future-proofing this, against the possibility that the GAC may change its operating principles to define consensus in a way that would be a simple majority or two-thirds majority, where you would have actually a substantial minority of governments or a number of very important governments that would object to the GAC advice, and avoid the possibility that the board may have to enter into good faith negotiations to find a mutually acceptable solution with GAC advice that does not have unanimous or near unanimous support. And I think this is why this concern has been raised. As you know, GAC operating procedures are currently to operate by consensus, unanimous, without formal objection wherever possible. And I think this is very consistent with that. Nothing in the future would prevent the GAC, even if it changed its operating principles, from providing advice to the board. This would simply, or define consensus however it wants to. What this would do is say the board is only obligated to enter into good faith negotiations to find a mutually acceptable solution if there is actual unanimity or, in terms of the UN consensus, the lack of formal objection. And I think that's reasonable. It's consistent with the current GAC procedures, and I think it helps protect the board from difficult situations in the future. Thanks.
Thank you, Brett. I think you've really recapped a concern that has been voiced a number of times already. My understanding from reading this European GAC members' proposal is that this is actually providing a way to mitigate a little bit this concern, because it is whatever the GAC, if the GAC were ever, and it's been consistent that they said it would not be acceptable, move to simple majority voting with these proposals currently on your screen, that simple majority vote would not suffice to get the board to force the board to get into the mutually agreeable solution, because what the definition is that there would need to be a consensus with objections only from a very small minority of GAC members. So I think that's my understanding. It was that this concern was trying to be addressed in this proposal. The next is Rudolf.
Yes, Mathieu. This is Rolof Meijer for the record. Well, as co-chair, you made my point exactly. I don't know if that's good or if that's bad, but departing from the same angle as Brett, I come to a completely different conclusion, and that with stress test 18, we wanted, or the outcome of stress test 18, we wanted to prevent GEC getting too much influence if it changes its operating principles. And I think this proposal does exactly that, because it makes a clear distinction between full consensus and near consensus advice as compared to all the other ways that GEC eventually could come up with an advice. So my opinion is that this proposal indeed exactly covers the problem that we foresaw and that we were addressing with stress test 18. And probably it's nobody's perfect solution, but as the best solution we can get, I think it's quite a good one.
Thank you, Rudolf. I'm seeing agreement from Avery and Brett back in the line. Brett, I'll give the floor to you back right away, but would encourage others to voice their views as well, so that we spread the different points of views as wide as possible in our group.
Sure. Just two short points. First, the definition of very small minority obviously is ambiguous. To me, that means two or three countries. Other people, it might be 10. Other people, it might be 15. Because that would still be 10% of the GAC as it currently stands. So very small minority doesn't necessarily mean anything specific. Second, as I said before, even if you have GAC advice with objection presented to the board, nothing prevents the GAC from presenting that advice to the board, nor does it prevent the board from engaging with the GAC to try and resolve that issue. What we're saying here is that there shouldn't be an obligation in that instance. And that is the key difference here. Thank you.
Thank you. And since you had a second time, I guess Rudolf can have a second bite as well. Rudolf?
Thank you, Mathieu. Yeah, maybe I can just suggest that we remain far from saying that a very small minority can be something like 15 or 20. Maybe if it's 15,000 or 150,000 or 1.5 million, then yes, 15 is a very small minority. But in the present situation in the GAC and in any future situation in the GAC, I think we are all pretty clear about what a very small minority is. And if any day there is going to be a huge difference between what the GEC considers to be a very small minority and what the rest of the community considers to be a very small minority, I'm sure that the community will have the final say.
Thank you, Rudolf. I'm seeing some comments in the chat and would like to ask whether others would like to voice views on this. Steve?
It's Steve Gialbianco, and in response to some questions from GAC members, good questions from GAC members at the Los Angeles Intersessional, we prepared a rationale from the stress test team for why we had said only consensus advice would trigger the mutually acceptable solution angle. And it was to avoid placing the board of ICANN in a position of getting advice where some significant number of governments objected to the advice. If they actually objected to the advice, you put the board in a position of arbitrating among sovereign governments. And I think that rationale met with wide agreement that the last thing we wanted to do was to place ICANN's board in a position of dealing with several governments who strongly objected to a piece of advice that came over from the GAC and trying to find a mutually acceptable solution where the governments themselves didn't have consensus. So I'm only repeating the rationale that we surfaced just before Dublin and discussed in Dublin with wide agreement. And given that rationale, it does make it awkward that a very small minority might have strong objections. And that is why on the last couple of calls we tried to put some concept to that, and I would say that if we require the board to seek a mutually acceptable solution in the case where governments, some number of governments, feel strongly against it, we are really exposing the board to an untenable situation. The final word on how to react to this will come when all the different ACs and SOs react to the proposal that this subgroup puts in front of the full CCWG and in their final report. But we clearly haven't solved the problem that rationale sought to avoid with the text that we have on the screen right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Could you elaborate exactly how the existing CCWG second report proposal would address this?
Yeah, the second CCWG report suggested that in the only where the GAC had consensus, and it does not define consensus firmly, so there is an understanding that that consensus could be something less than unanimity in the GAC, since the GAC preserves the ability to define its own consensus. So the text on the screen is somewhat tighter than what we had in our second draft report by suggesting a very small minority, and yet the text on the screen also elevates to two-thirds the board rejection requirement in the case where the GAC did have unanimity. So we continue to add different things in. Sometimes we'll strengthen on one side and weaken on another, and I realize that's pretty typical in negotiations of language of this type. But we do have two different factors, the two-thirds rejection, and some people have commented specifically on that. I'm just reiterating the notion of our rationale for requiring the GAC-TF consensus is to avoid placing the board in an impossible position among sovereign governments.
Thank you, Steve. Next is Greg.
Thank you. Greg Chatton for the record. My concern is that this will essentially turn into a rough consensus option for the GAC. And the proposal here gives this rough consensus option the same level of due deference that we currently give, or that the ICANN board currently gives, to essentially full consensus advice, and proposes giving an even greater amount of deference to advice that's full consensus supported, as opposed to the current level of deference. So, to my mind, in a lot of ways, this kind of is moving in the wrong direction. I'm sure GAC members would disagree strongly. But for me, it seems like what we're doing here is giving GAC a very enticing option of having less supported advice get the same amount of deference we currently give fully supported advice, and giving fully supported advice an even greater amount of deference. I'm not sure if anything but momentum is providing any impression of support for this outside of the GAC. I'm certainly within my own constituency experiencing a lot of resistance trying to find any support for this. You know, personally, I always try to look for compromise and getting to yes. I deal with transactions primarily in my real life, and if the transaction doesn't happen, that's a failure. So I try not to fail. But here, I'm just concerned that we're just letting the momentum and the time pressure and the kind of the particular balance of speakers on and participants in this group convince us that there is more support for this whole concept than we'll actually find out in the wild. So that's what I've got to say. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Phil?
Yes, thank you. And I just posted in the chat, I'm questioning why we even need this fourth paragraph in its present form. The default threshold for any board decision is that at least a majority of the board supports something or opposes something. Obviously, there's a minority of the board in that position. They lose. So rather than, you know, have this phrase, very small minority of GAC members, with all the uncertainty of what that means. Is that one nation, three nations, 10 nations? Who's going to decide? I mean, the board's going to decide. Anyway, why not just have something that says any other advice that is non-consensus advice of any form, any other advice approved by the GAC may be rejected by a majority vote of the board. That makes it clear the only advice that where the board has to meet a two-thirds threshold for rejection is full consensus advice. And everything else, whether it's two nations objecting, 10 nations, or even the GAC has gone to a majority vote system for making providing advice in the future, the board can accept or reject it by a majority vote, which is the default position, and the board gets to take into account the number of nations that objected and the basis of their objections before it takes that vote. I think leaving this very small minority language in is going to make acceptance of this very problematic. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. I would note that with that removal, the scope of advice, potential advice, if the GAC ever chose to go to simple majority voting, which I find quite unlikely, would be significantly enlarged, and that would exactly fit the concern that was voiced by Brett before that. So I expect that was the reason for not going that route. Avery, you're next.
Well, just in quick response, whether the GAC provides advice by simple majority or by consensus vote but not full consensus, some nations objecting, in all those situations, the board is going to take up the advice and decide on it by majority vote anyway. So it's just stating what the reality is going to be. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. Avery?
Yeah, this is Avery speaking. First, on Phil's comment, I agree that there's a problem with very small minority. I tend to want to see a number there. I don't think we need to go percentages. I think picking a number, you know, 3, 5, 6, it doesn't personally matter to me at this point. But I think keeping that 3%, the idea that that there may be more states joining at some point in the future, yeah, but it takes a lot of them at 3% to change the consideration any. So I would actually advocate leaving this in, but actually putting in an absolute number. In terms of the overall support of this, I think one thing we have to think about is that this needs to be seen by everybody in the full context of the whole report. We're focusing just on nitty-gritty of this. You know, some people have talked to their constituencies and stakeholder groups. I don't know how broad that discussion has been with the full level of explanations from both sides on it. So if this is the compromise point that can be found, I think when we're talking about within the CCWG, there are certainly individuals, myself among them, outside the GAC that support this. I know that I am at odds with my stakeholder group at the moment on this, or at least the five or six people in my stakeholder group talking about it. But, you know, I don't believe that that will necessarily remain the case in terms of the overall community. So if this is what we can reach, this is what we can reach. And the representative will be able to add, you know, their dissenting views if necessary. So, and now, and the other one I wanted to comment on is the often mentioned that once before the two-thirds was rejected. And at that point, it was a different situation, you know. Having turned something down a year ago or more does not mean that it can never be reconsidered again. And so, again, if it's reconsidered within the context of the whole thing, reconsidered that this only applies in full consensus, and that we have locked in at that point in bylaws the fact that full consensus of the GAC is the most significant, and anything else will be looked at with less. And that was also something that we never resolved. And so this does resolve an open issue, which may, you know, change some people's views on the two-thirds, as I say, in the overall context. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Avery. Rudolf?
Thank you, Mathieu. Rudolf Meyer. A few points. First, I think it was Greg who said, but I'm not sure, so correct me if I'm wrong, but who suggested that those who are in favor of this proposal are saying that there will be a lot of community support for it. So far, I haven't heard anybody who is actually supporting this proposal say that, but I've heard a lot of people who are not supporting this proposal saying that it will never be accepted by the community. So I think we are divided on that, and then the best way to find out is to put it forward to the community, but as Avery says, then in the context of the whole proposal, and that, not in an isolated way as we are now discussing it. Secondly, I had an audio break when Avery was talking, so maybe she made that point, but when Phil said that we could skip the fourth paragraph, I'm not sure if he realized that the then fourth paragraph, which is now the fifth paragraph, will have a strange sentence in it, because it is dealing with exactly the two situations, full consensus advice and near consensus advice. It's clear that the GAC wants those two types of advice to get the same treatment, in the sense of, if it is rejected, that the board will try in good faith, in a timely manner and an efficient manner, to find a mutual acceptable solution. And my third point is, and I made it in an email that I sent earlier today, in this whole discussion, we seem to be departing all the time from a situation where we assume that the GAC advice is something we would not like to follow, we being the community, and where the board is with us. And I find it, especially the latter bit, a bit strange, because in a lot of other discussions, we had so many of us arguing that the board, in most cases, is against the community. But I would just like to submit that there's a very likely case that the GAC comes up with sound advice that the community would like to follow, and that there might be one or two governments who are against that advice. And that it's possible that there is a majority, a simple majority, in ICANN board also against that advice. And that's the other situation where I think this proposal brings forward a solution. On the aspect of the GAC board, if it's not a full consensus advice, having to negotiate or deal with countries, I don't think that's true. Because if we follow this proposal, that's a proposal from the GAC how to deal with GAC advice. So the ICANN board can always say, no, no, we're not negotiating between governments. We're just following the GAC advice on how to deal with GAC advice.
Thank you, Rudolf. A complex situation right now. Thomas, would you like to offer some thoughts?
Thanks very much, Mathieu. Hello, everyone. It is challenging, indeed. Let me try to summarize where I think we are, where we came from, and also offer a way forward, possibly. When we started all this, we wanted to make sure that there's no possibility for the GAC to change its operating principles in no time and then force the board to react up to something which is not consensus anymore. Certainly, we don't want to impose or dump on the GAC any, in any sort of fashion, what the GAC does and how the GAC comes to its consensus positions. But we want to define what the board's reaction should be to GAC advice or whatever signals might be coming from the GAC. Now, some think that we are not specific enough in terms of defining the level of support that an advice must enjoy inside the GAC, and let me speak to that in a moment. So I think what is needed is, in our aim to make things clearer and not unduly increase government influence to the board, we need to be as clear or as possible or as little ambiguous as possible. Second point is that we talk about the simple majority versus two-thirds majority in the board needed to reject GAC advice. So this two-thirds requirement that came in is deemed by some as making it unduly hard for the board to reject advice. Others flag that it increases the GAC's influence too much, yet others claim that it might be in contradiction to what Fadi stated in Congress a few months back. So how can we possibly resolve that? And how can we make sure that the views are getting maybe a little bit more balanced? Remember, two-thirds majority inside the board means 11 board members. Versus 9 board members for a simple majority. So we're not talking about a lot where we've seen previously that the board usually takes unanimous decisions on GAC advice. So, maybe we should step back a little and not get too hung up about the two-thirds versus simple majority issue. So why don't we drop the idea of two-thirds? And make it a little bit more flexible with when it comes to the determination of support inside the GAC. So if we just think about this for a moment. Let's not differentiate between UN consensus-based advice and other advice inside the GAC. But let's just talk about advice that enjoys broad support in the absence of significant objection inside the GAC. I think that's what we're trying to say, really, in plain language. It would then be up to the board to determine whether there is broad support and the absence of significant objection. And I think that the GAC should be transparent about how the decision on the advice came about inside the GAC in order to allow for this determination to be made by the board. And while I agree that it's a general term, it doesn't have a specific number, it allows for the board to act. And everybody who's working with legal texts knows that legal texts do use general language. In many cases, the application of those texts work, but in other cases, they don't work. And then the parties that feel aggrieved by this should use the IRP and see and have checked whether the board has accurately construed the bylaw language. So my suggestion would be we drop the notion of two-thirds, and we clarify the language of support that is needed inside the GAC. We drop the idea of having two different classes of GAC advice that need different treatment, but whenever GAC advice enjoys broad support in the GAC, in the absence of significant objection, then a simple majority board decision is required to reject the advice, and then we would need to enter into the process of trying to find a mutually acceptable solution.
Thank you, Thomas. You're suggesting some form of middle ground between both proposals, the second report and this GAC members' proposal, which is so dropping the two-third language, so a single type of advice, but with some flexibility in the definition of consensus, with a mention of broad support and something in between this absence of significant objection or very small minority of objections. I am seeing that you are going to propose that language, but would like to hear comments on that, if there are any. Brett?
With respect to Thomas, and I appreciate his effort to try and square the circle, the stress test 18 language is what happens if the GAC redefines its own definition of consensus and how would the board react to that. I don't think his language of absence of a significant objection gets us very much closer to a resolution for that stress test. That was the whole reason why we wanted to insert the current operating procedure 47 definition into the bylaws in the first place. Thank you.
Thanks, Brett. Rudolf, while Thomas is trying to work it on the wording.
Yeah, Rudolf? Thank you, Mathieu. Similar point. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Ah, okay. Similar point. I think we're way past that. In fact, I think we would restart the discussion then, unless I understood Thomas wrongly. But I think we have passed that station already, and we couldn't solve it. And that's why we actually came on the two-thirds and then the different varieties of advice. So I don't think that will bring us anything that we can actually solve. Thank you.
Thank you, Olaf. Jorge, next.
Hello. Good afternoon. Did you hear me?
Yes, Jorge. Welcome.
Jorge, thanks for the record. I was a bit reluctant to intervene because I'm going to remain as constructive as possible, but I have to share a feeling which I have after these days of discussion, that from the beginning, some countries, beginning with Julia's proposal last Monday, I think, and with Mark's last facilitation proposal last Friday, we've been trying to bridge the gap as much as possible to some of the persons and colleagues who have expressed concerns. We have tried to address that concerns on an objective and neutral basis. And for instance, I think it was only last Wednesday when we had a counter proposal by Brett Schaefer. When we moved on last Friday to a text that was basically the same text that Brett Schaefer had proposed, we started to see counter-proposals which made so-called friendly amendments to that text, which were not productive at all from a GAC perspective. And I think that that was very clear from the beginning. During this weekend, we have received some other counter-proposals which go in the same line, opening new issues which had not been discussed by this group and, in my opinion, are not within the remit of this group. And so I have the feeling, short to sum up this this story, that when we receive proposals to bridge the gap, we just receive reactions that move the target a bit longer or a bit far away. I think it's not a constructive way of trying to solve a problem. It's definitely very difficult to reach an agreement on this basis. And I would suggest the co-chairs that they check the temperature of the room on the proposals we have on the table. I don't know if also the proposal that Thomas Rickert just made, and see to each and every of these two or three proposals what degree of support we have in this subgroup. Because otherwise, we can come up with new compromise solutions, with new tries to bridge the gap. But if the strategy and the tactics are to move the target every time a little bit farther, it will be impossible to reach a compromise solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Jorge. And I appreciate your suggestion to of a way forward in taking the temperature. Certainly will be something we need to do very soon. Pedro?
Yes, Mathieu. Very, very briefly, I want to express my agreement with Jorge's statement intervention. I think since Dublin, the GAC, and also together with other colleagues from other stakeholder groups, we have been making a continuous effort to try to bridge the gap between different positions within the CCWG on this matter. I think the GAC communique already represented a major concession from governments. We agreed the requirement of consensus. Then further, the proposal put forth by Brazil was again a new intention, a new try, attempt to bridge that gap. And we have seen a sequence of attempts to, in good faith, bridge the gap. But I think what I see, and I fully agree with Jorge, I see that new requirements are being, or new level of intention to impose, let's say, certain definitions on the GAC or to limit the GAC's ability to work is being put on the table. And I think, as Jorge said, it's not being constructive at all. I think we cannot go further than that. As you said, this is our last meeting, and I think we need to, as Jorge suggested, maybe try to put a different proposal on the table right now and see what is, let's say, the preference for that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Pedro. And at this point, I'd like to recognize that we are certainly have come to a significant point in our discussion where it's clear that there are different options and we need to define which ones we refer to. I would first like to get some feedback from the. I will ask for feedback on the in the room, and everyone's on the AC room, so we'll use the Green Cheeks and Red Cross approach to take the temperature on basically the European GAC members' proposal with the addition of the clear rational clause. Then we'll be looking at the middle ground proposed by Thomas Rickert, which we'll see on the screen shortly, and look how these support and objections, if there's a significant difference in favor of one of them. Thomas, would you like to introduce, are we ready to look at the writing of Thomas Rickert's proposal? If we can have it on screen.
I've sent it to staff a couple of minutes back, and I pasted it into the chat section as well, although I'm just noticing that I forgot the first sentence, which remains unaltered. So it would read, the advice of the Governmental Advisory Committee on Public Policy Matters shall be duly taken into account, both in the formulation and the adoption of policies. Now, suggestion, we should also use the transparency or rationale language offered by Steve, so that's not in there yet. And then it would continue, in the event that the ICANN board determines to take an action that is not consistent with the Governmental Advisory Committee advice, it shall so inform the committee and state the reasons why it did not follow that advice. Any governmental advisory committee advice which enjoys broad support of the advisory committee members in the absence of significant objection may only be rejected by a majority vote of the board. In this case, the governmental advisory committee and the ICANN board will try in good faith and in a timely manner, to find a mutually acceptable solution. So that's basically what I outlined during my last intervention. And while you think about this, let me again remind you that we're talking about the difference between 9 and 11 board members required for rejection. So giving up the two-thirds requirement is a little bit of a sacrifice for the GAC, I agree. At the same time, if we proceeded that way, we could take away some of the concerns or perceived concerns based on reasons that I mentioned earlier, one of them being, you know, bigger influence of the GAC combined with Fadi's testimony in Congress a while back. Since we're only having the simple majority advice, it is a little bit easier, if you wish, for the board to reject this vote. But wouldn't you agree that the board will never take a decision lightly to reject GAC advice anyway? So it would carefully analyze the level of support and the level of objection inside the GAC and then possibly try to find a solution with the GAC anyhow. So in my view, having heard all the arguments over the last couple of months, I think that could be a suitable compromise. And again, when it comes to the question of who determines what is broad support or what is a significant objection, it is not common in the legal world to leave terms general and abstract so that they could apply to a variety of circumstances and let the board use its best judgment to determine based on the information by the advisory committee. And I trust that we would be fine. I can't resist quoting and shouting out to Phil Corwin, who said, can the Rockert language be made downloadable? I first read Rockert language because it might be so good, and I hope that some of you agree that it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. So the main difference is that it has this Rockert language. Does not have the two-third level, which was raising some concerns, and obviously is part of the Dublin input from the GAC, so that's departing from this, and it has a slightly more flexible definition of consensus than the existing operating principle 47. That's the main aspect. Brett, would you like to say a word, and then I'll try to go for taking a temperature, Brett.
Thank you. If Thomas would replace the words of significant with the word formal, so it would read support of government advisory in the third paragraph, any government advisory committee advice which enjoys broad support of government advisory committee members in the absence of formal objection may only be rejected by a majority vote of the board, I would be perfectly fine with this. Thank you.
Yes, Brett, I expect you would be, but with all due respect, that would be certainly not acceptable from what I understand from the GAC members, because there would be an extra departure from the Dublin input about the ability to define the way of consensus. So I don't think this is a friendly amendment and would...
But Matthew, it is perfectly consistent with operating principle 47 as it currently stands.
Yes, but therefore, the key aspect, Brett, what we've heard in this discussion is that operating principle 47 is something that it has been maybe discussed within the GAC at some point. There's a strong commitment from the GAC towards consensus decision making, but there's a clear input to our group that has been made very clear around all the public comments that some in the GAC and a significant number want some flexibility. And the amendment you're suggesting would remove any level of flexibility, and that is why I believe it would not be friendly. And I'm seeing this that is exactly what Jorge was referring to, and it's I'm a bit sad that we have not been able, within all these subgroups, to recognize these concerns from each and every party at this point. So can we move back to the GAC European members' proposal to take the temperature on it? I would like to have it on the screen for that. Okay, so can I ask, on this European GAC members' proposal, which has the two levels of board approval required and two different levels of consensus, can we have a show of green ticks of red crosses in the AC room to take the temperature and see how much we would have support or objections? I know there's something...
Matthew, this is Thomas. So you're going to offer this and then my revised language?
Absolutely, Thomas. Absolutely, Thomas. Okay. I'm giving you some time. So at this point, there's seven green ticks and one, two, three, no, there's eight green ticks and one, two, three, four, five, six, seven red crosses. There is nine and seven. At this point, and so that's, I would call it, the temperature is taken. This is a very split view on this particular one. Can I ask that you clear your green ticks or red crosses, and in the meantime, we will show the rocket proposal. And I see Thomas is already moving to the rocket proposal by changing his green tick. Can we have the rocket proposal on the screen, please? There's a little bit of time necessary to shift screens. Can I have some acknowledgement from staff that they are moving back to the rocket proposal on screen, please? Because I'm not seeing any movement. Yes, it's coming. Okay, so that's the Thomas rocket proposal with no longer two-third board threshold required, and a definition of consensus which is broad support in the absence of significant objection. And can I ask, please, that you provide your green ticks or red crosses at this point? I'm giving a little bit of time. And I note Jorge's comment in the chat explanation that it's only as a way to achieve compromise that he's offering a green tick. And I think that's a general spirit for many, that if it's ever a green tick, then it's certainly not the preferred way forward. And I see Keith and Phil are also supporting this. So we are at 10 in agreement and 2 in disagreement. Pedro is mentioning that he's not in a position right now to make a provide an input. I heard someone wanted to speak. Did I hear correctly? Okay. So
I would like
we are currently... Yes, Rudolf, would you like to say something? We are at 10-3 at this point.
Okay. I just want to check or maybe make this perfectly clear that the only significant difference, so there's some taken out, but the only significant difference between the proposal and this, what you call it, the rocket proposal, is that the condition that if rejected, the board will try in good faith in a timely and efficient manner to find a mutually acceptable solution in the rocket proposal is only valid for consensus advice. And in the other proposal, it is valid for full consensus advice and near consensus advice. That is the only practical difference.
Thank you, Rudolf. I will confer with Thomas co-chairs about this, but my impression would be that the rocket proposal provides maybe a slightly higher potential for being an acceptable for compromise for all sides, and therefore should be investigated. But I see Thomas' hand is up now.
Yeah, let me just briefly go on the record saying that, you know, we are now in a phase where we need to compromise, and I've seen that some have added reservations in the chat room that they would support this language as a matter of compromise. So I think, you know, some of you might feel like this is choosing the lesser evil, and I sympathize with that. But Roloff, in response to your previous intervention, I agree that the difference is not a big one. But let me quote Phil again. He said that the suggestion I made is much less of a lightning rod in the community and Congress. And I think it's exactly those unintended side effects that people were concerned about. So if we can remove some of the concerns, then I think we're closer to consensus. And again, thanks everyone who has changed their views and who said that, okay, while the European gag reps propose as my preferred option, I would be okay with supporting this. I guess it's the spirit of compromise that has always been a feature of the CCWG. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. And Indeed, I think this it's a promising way forward, and we will certainly report it without while recognizing and acknowledging the contributions that led to this European GAC member proposal as well. Rolof?
Yeah, thank you, Mathieu, and sorry to be on the mic so frequently. I just, in reaction to what Thomas said, I just made that point because, in my opinion, in any case, if there is a significant group as a part of the multi-stakeholder community that places the ICANN board, I think if that advice is rejected, it would be a good standard procedure to try, in good faith and in a timely and efficient manner, to find a mutually acceptable solution. So it's I don't see this as a threat that increases the power of the GAC. I think this is just common good practice to do that if you get an advice from a particular stakeholder group that has significant support. That's just my case. So I'm not the GAC, so I can live with both versions, but I just don't understand why we are so afraid of this clause that in good faith and in a timely and efficient manner, we will have to try to find a mutually acceptable solution.
Thank you very much, Olaf. Greg, last intervention, and then I will try to take stock and explain the way forward.
Just briefly in response to Roloff, I disagree with what he said, and I think that the due what we call the due deference language here in the GAC section of the bylaws is unique and significant, and I don't think it's just best practice. In practice, it results in particular treatment for GAC advice, which none of us are objecting to, at least for consensus GAC advice. But it's to try to say that it is insignificant, I think, is to understate the significance of it, and not a useful way forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. So, based on this feedback, and I want to thank you all for making these difficult calls of, and I'm very much aware of the reservations that were expressed in the chat about the ability to, for the Green Ticks or Red Crosses to be representatives of your respective communities or countries. But I think what I am taking from there is that in terms of reports to the CCWG, number one, there's been some clarity gained on the requirements underlying this discussion that we'll certainly have to recap for the whole group, and that includes the necessity for a clear advice, a clear rationale of the advice from the GAC as well as from other advisory committee. I take from this discussion that the two-third threshold for the board has been creating some concern for some stakeholders, but also was part of the GAC Dublin input as well. And I would offer that we provide the CCWG with a comparison of the existing second report proposal, the GAC European members proposal, as well as the latest rocket proposal, indicating that our initial assessment during the call, and obviously that has limits, is that there might be a slightly higher potential for consensus and compromise in this last proposal, but obviously subject to everyone checking with their respective communities. And as such, it could be a useful way to demonstrate how that we are making progress and taking the input from the second public comment and from Dublin into account to demonstrate that, to take that into our draft report at the CCWG level. And I'm seeing Phil's hand is raised now. Phil?
Well, I'm seeing Greg's in front of me. Did Greg want to go?
No, he was an old hand.
Oh, old hand. Okay. As I understand it from the discussion notes, what's going to be forwarded to the CCWG is both the European GAC proposal and the Rickert, or as I mistyped, Rockert proposal. Since the European proposal will be presented, I just wanted to raise the language I circulated last night briefly and just explain its purpose. Is that okay?
Yeah, I think that now that we've making this, that's an extra item we need to discuss.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, this is meant as a purely friendly amendment. If the European proposal for requiring a two-thirds board rejection vote in some circumstances is going forward, and the language would be, the language of the first paragraph would be, the advice of the Governmental Advisory Committee on public policy issues related to matters under deliberation or implementation within the ICANN community, and then go reverse to the rest of the language. This has been, this merely memorializes what the GAC's procedure has been. The GAC, in all the instances I know of, has been providing advice on matters which are already under discussion in PDPs or other formal avenues within the ICANN community, or where a PDP is being implemented, and the prime example is a new TLD program. I think we have to, you know, not to restate things, but the issue of formalizing the board's current practice of rejecting, requiring at least a two-thirds board vote to reject advice, GAC consensus advice, was very controversial and broadly rejected by the ICANN community within the past year. It caught the attention of Congress, and Fadi was asked about it and reassured Congress that it was off the table. So it's going to be focused on by both the community and the Congress, and we heard from Fadi this morning that NTIA is telling him, this was on a SO and AC leaders call just before ours, that NTIA is telling him that the .com Act is likely to be enacted, passed by the Senate and enacted next month. So this would assure both the community, this language I'm suggesting would assure both the community and Congress that the GAC could not on its own provide advice that has not been deliberated on or decided to be implemented by the broader community. It wouldn't prevent it from providing advice in that matter. It would just not require the board to reject it by a two-thirds vote, and it would, in fact, encourage the GAC, if it came up with issues on its own, to perform outreach to the rest of the community. So I'll stop there. It's a friendly amendment, but I think it's an important amendment if the two-thirds vote proposal goes forward within the CCWG. Thank you.
Phil, let me ask you a clarifying question, and it's only a very brief response I'm expecting. Should this be considered a friendly amendment and integrated, would that lead you to prefer the two-third option and approve it because you were not in favor of this earlier, or would that not change your preference for the option where it's not, the two-third is not there?
Well, I can't give a simple yes no. It would make the two-thirds proposal much less problematic for me, and I would be happy to state publicly that it's a much less concern to me personally if it goes forward. I think the alternative presented by Thomas this morning still presents much less potential problems down the road than the European GAC members' proposal.
Thank you. Does anyone, any of the European GAC members want to say, react to say whether they find this a friendly amendment or whether I'm seeing some discussion on that in the chat, because I guess it's presented as a friendly amendment and we should check that. I'm seeing that Raphael is not exactly feeling this is a friendly amendment. He's mentioning that this is a new additional issue raised at a late stage. And Jorge seems to be in agreement with that. My personal feeling, Phil, is that it's indeed adding a new constraint on the GAC because it's restricting consideration of GAC advice by the board. And as such, I find it difficult to believe that the GAC would find it friendly. Megan, no, that's not related. Okay, I think we're a bit over time already, but I appreciate your intent, Phil, and I know exactly what you're trying to address here. However, I must say that it's with the record proposal and language, we may have a way forward that is probably a little more promising. So I would suggest we leave it at that at this point. Okay, so I think we've made everything we could at this point. What remains to be done and will be done in the next few hours is summarize the options that we discussed, the requirements. I will certainly add a couple of considerations from a chairing point of view in terms of assessment where the temperature was. Not providing any figures because I don't think figures are very relevant. But I think there was some form of clear indication of the type of support and objections we could have, and move it, circulate it quickly to the full CCWG because consideration of the way forward is going to be on the agenda tomorrow. And I think we will certainly take that onto the full group tomorrow and hopefully find a way forward for our third proposal. It will certainly not be an enthusiastic compromise report. I will certainly have to say that it's a complex issue and it hasn't been the options for considerations will not satisfy everyone, but I hope we can find a way to convince everyone that it's an appropriate way forward, something that's not worth dying in the ditch for. And that way we would provide a good way to demonstrate the how constructive the multi-stakeholder model might be. I will certainly recognize the efforts from all in this call who provided constructive proposals to try and understand and accommodate the other parties' views in these discussions. And let's all remember that it would be so sad, actually, and so detrimental to the multi-stakeholder model that we're trying to promote if our efforts, the whole CCWG efforts, were jeopardized by this particular issue. And I think it's very important that we find closure on that. So with that, I will now thank you all for your for being available for all those calls in this subgroup. It's been a very professional and respectful discussion, and I do hope that we can bring you to a close tomorrow in the CCWG. So thank you very much, everyone, and talk to you tomorrow or actually very soon. Bye.
Thank you, Mathieu. Bye.
Thank you, Mathieu.
Bye, all.